Hey, Bankless Nation, it is the fifth and final week of June. We have begun July, and it is time for roll-ups, weekly roll-ups. David, you ready for this?
Absolutely. I drank my coffee. I've got the energy. I'm ready to roll up the week in crypto with you, Ryan.
Dude, it's almost like the 4th of July. Are you celebrating this weekend?
Yeah. Tomorrow, I'm going on a boat. And then on Friday, I'm watching fireworks, as one does.
Nice,
or excuse me, on Sunday.
Yeah, as am I. And I was kind of curious, this like, what stage do you think we'll be in where blockchains have their own holidays? Do you think that'll happen? Like there will be a day, like maybe in the future, was it December 1st, ETH2 staking first went live? Will the Ethereum community celebrate that as a holiday?
Right, every December 1st? Well, I can tell you the United States of America will not be celebrating that because that's a nation state holiday, not a blockchain holiday. True. So really it'll only kind of be for like the Ethereum native to like have kind of their own day. But then it's
crypto
not a holiday,
holidays?
Right? It's like, hey, it's the 10th anniversary of EIP-1559, like not coming into work. Like, no, like that's not going to happen.
All right. Well, maybe we'll celebrate on Bankless. Anyway, sorry for the digress, guys. This is the quickest way to get crypto downloaded into your brain. Every week we cover market releases, news, takes, and then what we're excited about. This comes out every Friday with your morning coffee live, not live, but it comes on YouTube and also on the podcast.
Feels
you want to get it. Feels pretty live. David, we should talk about Kyber first because we've been promising this for a while, but they just rolled out a really cool liquidity program. What's going on with Kyber?
Yeah, Kyber is doing a liquidity mining program both on the L1, but also on the Polygon L2. This is part of the DeFi Summer Thesis Layer 2 edition, is that there's going to be a bunch of liquidity mining rewards existing on the Layer 2. So if you're looking on the screen, you can see all of the different ways that you can get some extra yield on your yield. Yo, dog, I heard you liked yield. So if you are supplying stable coins,
yield.
Get yield on your yield. If you're supplying stable coins, take a look at Kyber's new Rainmaker liquidity mining program. There's a link in the show notes below where you can find out how to get some extra KNC and some extra Matic tokens if you are bullish on those particular two assets.
Guys, 25 million in rewards over the next 3 months. Not a small amount. So check that out. Make sure you check that out. All right, David, you ready to get to markets?
Let's do it, Ryan.
Let's talk Bitcoin first. What's going on with Bitcoin price since last week?
Bitcoin started the week at $34,000, dropped all the way down to $30,000, jumped up to $36,500, and is currently at the level of $33,300. That's what happened with Bitcoin last week.
Is this crab season? It's just a little back and forth,
yeah, feels
sideways.
Like, feels like
sideways.
Crab season. Yeah, we go up a little bit, people get bullish, we go down a little bit, people get bearish. At the end of the week, we're at the same level we started with. Crab season.
Crab season, crab summer. Okay, what about ETH? Same story. Dude, these charts look similar.
Yeah. No.
Actually, that's because it's the same chart. Never mind.
Yeah,
I have Bitcoin price twice.
The story is going to be pretty much the same. Ether started the week at $2,000, fell down to the low price of $1,700, spooked some people, and then it jumped to $2,300, got people excited again. Now it's at $2,100, and then once again, ended the week how we started it, roughly at the same price. Crab season, yo.
Let's see if we're seeing any story in the ETH Bitcoin ratio. What's this ratio showing? Are we up or down on the week?
We are up on the week. We tapped a new local low of 0.055, but Ether seems to really be allergic to anything below that. And so we jumped from 0.055 to almost 0.066. So almost up 10% versus Bitcoin on the week. I tweeted out, there was a day where Ether really jumped up versus Bitcoin. I think it was like 2 days ago. And I tweeted out, ETH BTC up 8%. Resume flipping talk, and clearly that tweet had product market fit because it got over like 700 likes in like a day and a half.
Have you seen some flipping talk yet, though? I haven't seen as much.
I told people to resume it, so I guess we'll see.
Okay, so now after the roll up, guys, you can resume flipping talk. You know what? I want to take some credit for this tweet, David, because I said this in December 2020. This may be hard for some of you to hear, but ETH will outperform Bitcoin again in 2021. Quote me. I said, I threw that out there, David. And you know what? At the time, it was really Bitcoin maximalism season very much. Like Bitcoin was just like wrecking everything else. Here we are, 6 months in. Bitcoin is up 16% year to date. ETH is up 188%.
This was right after
feeling
DeFi
good about
season.
This prediction.
This was right after DeFi season, right after everyone was bearish on Ether because all the DeFi tokens mooned and Ether just lagged behind. And then you tweeted this, and then it was like, oh yeah, Ether took the reins for the next like 6 months. But Ryan, yeah. Question to you. Do you think,
yes.
Is it going to happen again? What about for the next 6 months?
Like, you mean the next 6 months?
Outperform?
I want to say yes, but I'm not putting my full weight into that prediction, David. Where I'm putting my full weight is I think by end of the year, if you look year to date, ETH will still have outperformed Bitcoin. I feel really comfortable with that prediction. I'm not sure what the next 6 months will bring. Mm-hmm. I still feel like it's probably true. Although look at this, man. ETH is already up 188%, whereas Bitcoin is up 16%. It's like, it just has to kind of hold that. The prediction comes true. So I'm being sort of conservative. I think it'll happen, but I'm not too sure. We'll see what that ratio does.
Granted, Bitcoiners said very similar things about Bitcoin versus Ether throughout 2019 and 2020 because Bitcoin really outperformed Ether. And yes. Really, it was just kind of signals like, well, maybe I should rotate then, because if you sold Bitcoin for Ether while Bitcoiners were talking about how Bitcoin has outperformed, that was the right move.
Or just don't worry about it and hold sure. Hold both, sure. You know? That's a secret. Okay, let's talk about DeFi Pulse. What's going on with total locked value in DeFi? We're at 52 billion, down from the highs. Still haven't hit crash that season. Like that 100 billion mark seems kind of far away at this point. But what's happening here? We're just crabbing.
Keeping the head above $50 billion locked in at DeFi. Aave staying around 15% dominance. Not really too much churn going on right now, I would say.
All right, how about DPI? This is our index of DeFi tokens. Looks like that's kind of also flat on the week-ish.
Shocker. Crab season. How many times are we going to say it in the market section?
not another time. Well, let's talk about the DPI index mm-hmm. to Ether. So this is a different seasonal benchmark. Oh, man, we're below 13%, David.
We are below 0.13, yet I am still feeling good about the DPI bottom. It's still proximate to 0.13. I didn't get the specific proximate. Number, but sure. I'm feeling good
in
about it being the bottom. I remember when we had Ledger on the State of the Nation, fantastic episode, you should go watch it. He talked about how like the 0.13 level could be like a good entrance and it might like dip below it and then kind of zoom back up for hopefully a DPI bull market, maybe. But like, I'm still feeling good about the bottom. Like maybe the 0.13 wasn't the perfect call, but like if this is actually the bottom, the 0.13 call will be great entrance if, of course, it doesn't go any lower. But I guess I'm just kind of like biting my own tail here.
Guys, we know that's important to David. So buy some DeFi tokens and support yeah. David's cause. He doesn't want to miss that one.
Please. I'm buying DPI right now. Just want to embarrass himself.
What's this? This is L2 Beat. I know you guys looked at this last week, but this feels like the DeFi Pulse of Layer 2. It's mm-hmm. it's like total locked value in Ethereum's Layer 2 platforms. What is this showing us?
Right. So just like DeFi Pulse, it shows you all the value that is deposited into all these various Layer 2s. There is $322 million in L2s. Last week, it was $340-something million. So down on the week. But this is something that we are going to track moving forward. This is very reminiscent to very early DeFi Pulse pages where, you know, when we were initially looking at the value locked in DeFi, we were looking at the tens and maybe even the hundreds of millions of dollars, whereas now we're looking at the billions of dollars. And so I'm pretty sure this story is going to be one to follow, which is why we're going to come back to L2 Beat frequently just to track the growth of Layer 2 on Ethereum.
It's kind of cool that it's pure Layer 2s. It doesn't include Polygon, right. For example.
If it did, it would just purist. Like drown out literally everything
oh
else.
Oh my God.
Here.
Polygon's got many billions now.
Billions, billions, so, and billions. Yeah. Which is why we know that this is coming, right? Like Optimism and Arbitrum going to open up in July. That's really where this game is going to start going.
All right, guys, we are going to be back with the hot releases for the week. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
The Aave protocol is a decentralized liquidity protocol on Ethereum, which allows users to supply and borrow certain crypto assets. Aave version 2 has a ton of cool features that makes using the Aave protocol even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi money Legos, yield, and composability all in one application. On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can supply to the protocol in order to gain yield, and all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have supplied collateral. One of my favorite Aave features is the ability to select a stable interest rate. Once I've selected a stable interest rate, I'm protected against any interest rate volatility that may happen in DeFi and allows me to plan my DeFi finances for the long term. V2 also features the ability for users to swap collateral without having to withdraw your assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. With Aave, users can do this in one seamless transaction, saving you time and gas costs. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's A-A-V-E.com. Balancer is a powerful platform for flexible automated market makers. Typical AMMs just have two tokens inside of one liquidity pool, which can lead to fractured liquidity across the many pairs in DeFi. With Balancer, you can access the full power of multiple tokens inside of one single AMM, which unlocks an entirely new playing field of possibility. This makes Balancer an awesome building block for so many different use cases. Balancer pools can make asset indices, but instead of paying fees to portfolio managers, Balancer lets you collect the fees from traders who use your portfolio for liquidity. Additionally, Balancer smart pools can be programmed to have properties that change according to predetermined rules, such as changing the swap fees based on market conditions, or even liquidity bootstrapping pools, which can help you launch and distribute your token with day one liquidity. At Bankless, we use a liquidity bootstrapping pool to sell our BAP t-shirts to much success. V2 brings powerful new features that makes your money work even harder for you. In V2, idle tokens are capable of generating yield in DeFi without sacrificing liquidity in the pool using asset managers. Balancer's vault architecture lets you trade between Balancer pools at a fraction of the cost versus other platforms. And you can even take advantage of dynamic fees, which automatically adapt to changing market conditions. Balancer's mission is to become the primary source of liquidity in DeFi by providing the most flexible and powerful platform for asset management and decentralized exchange. Dive into the Balancer pools at app.balancer.fi.
All right, guys, we are back with releases. David, we got to start here. Compound is doing some cool things. They launched the Compound Treasury, which it seems like provides institutions the ability to earn 4% APR. That's like 30x what you receive in a traditional savings account. So not insignificant. I think the difference is they're offering this to like a different audience. It's not the DeFi natives and crypto natives. It's institutions. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, these feel like the base hair follicles of the DeFi mullet. This is where the DeFi mullet grows out of. There's a super weird metaphor for you.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, this feels like a Compound just advertising, hey, just use us for your yield. Figure out how to attract capital. That's your guys' problem, but come to us for yield and we'll solve that yield problem for you. So Compound, opening up surface area for the DeFi mullet. More hair follicles.
You want to see some DeFi mullet? Yeah. David?
Sure.
Check this out, man.
Yeah.
Current.
Already.
Do you know
already
what current
working
is?
Look at this. Now I do. Yeah.
They say they're not a bank, but they kind of are a bank, right? Sure. They've got like bank connectivity. But look at this.
Improvement upon a bank. Sure.
But look at this. We're excited to work with Compound Treasury to be able to offer our members access to the protocol's interest rate through a simple, unified experience. DeFi mullet. DeFi fintech mullet. Mm-hmm. On the front, mm-hmm. Compound on the back. It's really cool to see.
Single solid hair growing out of Current, out of Compound's hair follicles. All right. How long should I take this metaphor for?
Keep going all episode. I'm really digging this. Okay.
10,000 word article coming in.
The dissection of the mullet. All right. Polygon launches Avail. Mm-hmm. Avail. What is Avail, David?
Yeah. Avail is a data availability layer on Polygon. So for those that are familiar with the project of Lazy Ledger, this is a similar data availability structure for the Polygon layer 2. So if you're into the world of cryptography and blockchain and consensus, you kind of know what I'm talking about. If you're not, then you're probably really confused, which is actually kind of closer to where I am. But basically, there's this data availability problem, and there's a number of different ways to solve it. And Avail is trying to solve it for the Polygon ecosystem.
Rollups have this limitation too, right? Storing mm-hmm. data on chain is one of their limitations. So this is really an effort to like further scale L2s and rollups mm-hmm. by offering a data availability layer on top of Ethereum. I haven't dug into the details. I'm sure this means even more to some of our listeners, but this is another scalability tech being based on Ethereum that's going to really propel the rollup roadmap, which is super cool, super exciting.
And this is all one of the bull cases for Polygon, is that any chain that Nick can and needs to be built will be built. And so that's kind of why Matic token is so highly valued, at least in my opinion.
It's kind of cool too. I think it's bullish for Polygon too. It's like they're not stopping with just sidechain, right? Mm-hmm. And I know they've said they're coming out with rollups and ZK rollup like tech and that sort of thing. But also a whole data availability solution. I was not expecting that. It's kind of mm-hmm. cool. All right, Cream Finance announcing integration with Polygon 2. So what is Cream? They're deploying on Polygon, another protocol, part of the theme here. But like, what are they?
Cream is a money market, just like Compound and Aave. I put them on, there's a different risk spectrum that every single money market really likes to take on. Compound is kind of known as the conservative risk-off money market. That's why they have such few assets on there. And that's
why they can do the DeFi mullet.
That's why they can do the DeFi mullet. Yep, and protocol sync thesis. Aave is kind of more in the liberal camp of risk, but still pretty good, right in the middle ground. Cream is like, yeah, let's open up
markets.
The floodgates of all the assets. Let's list all the assets. A little bit more risky, but you know, to some degree, you can only get liquidity on many different assets using Cream. And now Cream is on Polygon.
There you go. Very cool. All right, let's talk about Perpetual Protocol. Mm-hmm. So they have launched a cross-margin trading limit order multi-collateral protocol. This is basically on Arbitrum that they're launching as well. It's called Curie. What's special about this, David?
There's just a number of different use cases for financial activity that really can only work on layer two. And perpetual swaps is definitely one of them. Just high frequency trading, or just people that want to be really active with their trades. And anyone who's day trading, really, it works a lot better on layer two. So Perpetual Protocol, I'm actually doing a Meet the Nation with them. I'm recording with them today. So that will probably be out sometime early next week if you guys want a deeper dive into Perpetual Protocol. But overall, it's just a suite of trading activities. And now it can be done on layer two.
Speaking of Meet the Nations, actually, I think State of the Nation, we had Element Protocol on not too long ago. Their founder was on Will. And now it looks like they have finally deployed to Mainnet, which is super exciting. What is Element Protocol, David? What's the TLDR?
Yeah, Element Finance takes one asset and splits it into two. And so you have the principal asset and the yield asset. And it allows people to kind of break apart the different properties of a single asset and allows people to express their opinions about what they want in more granular ways. Do you want really the yield side of an asset, or do you want the principal side of an asset? And allows you to express, you know, your financial opinions about the future in different ways. Go check out the State of the Nation for more details. One of the really exciting things about Element is the team. A bunch of Ethereum OGs, both on the team itself as well as the advisors, just core Ethereum consensus, like Ethereum 1 builders, along with just Ethereum L2 advisors as well. Eric Connor is on the advisor. Danny Ryan's an advisor. So just an all-star team with an all-star product.
Very cool. All right. We also have more yield happening, this time on Coinbase. So this is super interesting to me. Coinbase is now going to start offering 4% APY on USDC coin inside of Coinbase. So previously, I think they have sort of a savings light type product. Mm-hmm. But if you have USDC on Coinbase, it offers like something like 0.15%.
Like, I thought it was similar. I thought it was like 1.5% when the last I checked.
It was at one time, but then it dropped all the way back down. So it's not really, it's more like a bank savings rate, a little bit higher, but not much. This is something different. This is where Coinbase is actually lending out your USDC, similar to how a BlockFi might lend it out, and is providing that higher APY, that 4% rate. So kind of interesting. It's unclear where they're getting the interest. It's kind of like BlockFi. It's sort of like a black box, David.
It's a little bit coincidental that you get 4% on Coinbase and Compound gives you 4% with their feature.
I was going to say this same week, kind of interesting. I mean, they could get 4% from Compound, right? That would be protocol sync thesis. Absolutely. Anyway, interesting that they are offering this, certainly competing with the BlockFi's of the world, maybe doing some protocol sync, getting into Compound. We're not sure, but we're actually going to have Robert Leshner on State of the Nation on Monday. So, he's been very involved. He's a founder of the Compound Protocol to talk about Compound
very
Treasury.
Involved. he is very involved.
He, without Robert, statement. It wouldn't have happened. Very involved.
Very active contributor.
Yeah, I may have downplayed that a little bit. He does some work for Compound. Kind of a big deal there. Anyway, he's going to tell us, hopefully, maybe we'll have comments on this Coinbase 4% APY. Because I know Coinbase and Compound have been close in the past too. So there you go. Sort of interesting. What's going on here? David, we gotta end releases with this. We have a couple of raises to talk about, but a new crypto comedy show has been released.
By who?
Dude, I watched it. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I love not having to like do the work to produce it, by the way.
And
I could just
sit,
I could just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So what is this? What'd you guys put out there?
Yeah, this is Top Signal, the newest show out of the Bankless ecosystem with Bankless's newest anchor, newest co-host, Michael Wong, the person that hired me for my first crypto job ever. And so we go way back. It was an ICO advisory company back in 2018. And that actually kind of led into our first like gag that we did where we presented the three guests. It was DeFi Dad, Kevin Iwaki, and Anthony Cesano. We presented them with two ICOs. One of them was real. One of them was fake. And they had to pick the real or the fake one. Three of them got it right. So it sounds like we need to get more creative on our ICOs. But we also did a crypto and on crypto Twitter fantasy draft. And so each person had to draft their favorite Anon crypto Twitter personalities. And so we got to like kind of, you know, jostle for who wants to pick what crypto Anon and then pitch our team and how our team's better than the rest. And we did some around the horn, just quick takes on different topics. It was super fun. The through line or the kind of the tagline for Top Signal is that it is in a superposition of a complete psyops or the best alpha you've ever seen, or just a normal factual statement. It could be any of those three. We don't know because we don't do any fact checking on Top Signal.
Yeah, it's just kind of fun. And I don't know what you guys have in store for the future, mm-hmm. but maybe some rap battles? That's a rumor.
Hayden Adams and Carl Florsch, we want you guys as a rap battle duo on Top Signal. It's going to happen point in time.
That would be amazing. It's just a fun show. I can't wait for the next one. It sounds like there's no real like schedule. Like, when's the next one going to be, David?
As soon as we corral the guests and get them onto the show, it's going to be different every single time. We have Alexandra Botez, the chess streamer, and she's going to come on with her co-host because she's actually also producing Ethereum content as well. And I'm going to try and find the four best chess players.
Are you going to try to beat them in chess?
Yeah, okay. We're going to try and 4v2 them and see how far we can get. But overall, it's just going to be a fun time.
That's awesome. All right, guys, let's switch to some of the raises really quick. So one is Nansen. So mm-hmm. Nansen is kind of like a blockchain data analytics provider.
Big data consumer, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they provide a lot of Ethereum data. So they just received a funding from A16Z, $12 million, not an insignificant amount. Any other takes on this?
Yeah, no, I think this is really important infrastructure for just people who want to view the chain for data, and the Ethereum blockchain has an insane amount of data, and so you need systems to parse and consume and like digest that data. That's what Nansen does, and so this is going to just be really important infrastructure moving forward.
Also with layer twos, man, all this data needs to be digested and consumed, so right. Super important there. Also, the Tracer DAO closed $4.5 million in a raise, some pretty solid VCs were behind this. So one is Framework Ventures, whom we've had on the podcast, but also some angels like Mariano Conti were part of this. And what is this protocol? It seems like it's perpetuals mm-hmm. again. So it's another story, and they're deploying on Arbitrum as well. So it's another layer two first deployment, not main chain, which is kind of interesting. We're seeing that trend. Anything else to add about Tracer DAO, David?
Yeah, the DAO tagline makes me think that it doesn't at all stop with perpetuals. I think it's going to be kind of something similar to a DEX DAO, where they're just making a suite of financial services that's owned and operated by the DAO, and those suite of financial services makes the DAO money. And there's really positive statements by basically everyone involved. Mariano Conti is somebody I definitely trust for Signal. So when he says that he's excited about something, I pay attention. So Tracer DAO, I'm going to be looking at you guys.
Mariano Conti, the maker mafia. Maybe that's a thing now. All right, David, let's talk news, man. First is some Ethereum stuff. This deserves our attention. A DeFi education fund was proposed in Uniswap governance. Of course, we've talked about before. Uniswap has an absolutely massive treasury. It's mostly in uni tokens.
You hear like it every billions. Single time in the Bankless ad.
Billions. Well, exactly. That's right. But now this is a governance proposal to actually create a DeFi education fund, in quotes. Mm-hmm. This is a nonprofit. So a 501c4 nonprofit based in the US. And it's trying to fund all of the following: policymaker education. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Lobby type stuff, thought leadership and research, legal firepower, messaging, grassroots advocacy and best practices. It has people like Jake Chervinsky on, has people in the DeFi space as well.
A lot of DAO experts here as well.
A lot of DAO experts, a lot of legal minds in DeFi. And this is, I feel like, David, this is DeFi starting to flex its muscle and saying, hey, we want a voice in legislation, and we want to expand into hearts and minds, and we have the money and funds to do that. So we're going to go deploy them. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, they are asking for 1 million UNI tokens, which is a
lot. How much is that?
That is $15, $18 million, depending on the state of the market. Let me go check the price of UNI right now. $17.7 per UNI token. So $17.7 million at the time of recording is what they are requesting, which is a large amount of money. But also, like, what the hell is the treasury for if you're not going to open up the purse strings, right? And so these are absolutely the right people to ask for this amount of money. And so I'm kind of pretty excited to see what they can get done with this. There is definitely some opportunities available for people to go and capture this. So kind of think of this as like its own like micro uni grants, right? They are taking Uniswap money, and then they are going to also give out grants with it. So it's a grant giving grant, and they have definitely goals and objectives that they want to reach. And there's a decent amount of things that the listener of this show could go and produce. For money, and so they are looking for. My eyes go to the thought leadership and research post where they say we need more written and video content explaining DeFi and its benefits in a medium that positively impacts the public perception of DeFi. Yo, like Ryan, you and I can do that, and so we might be going after this. Bankless DAO, I challenge you guys to go after this. Bankless listeners, I also challenge you guys to go after this money. This money is for you, so long as you can produce what these guys want you to produce.
Yeah, and what this really speaks to is I think DeFi is now fighting for hearts and minds, and it's deploying capital to fight for hearts and minds. And this is not just like
going on the offensive
narrative. Exactly, going on the offensive, but also like regulatory, which is really good to hear, because guess what? Banks have this kind of regulatory firepower. Even crypto banks have it. We're going to talk about some FTX news where they're deploying capital and, you know, all sorts of ways. So DeFi needs a voice in our legislative halls. And I think this is a step towards that. So kind of cool. David, let's talk about this. So Brian Armstrong, CEO of Coinbase, put out a post called Embracing Decentralization at Coinbase. And the headline here is basically talking about Coinbase creating kind of an Apple App Store experience, right? But treating DeFi protocols as first-class citizens. So DeFi protocols being kind of the apps, and Coinbase custody being sort of the, like the custodian solutions being sort of the user like the UI and the bridge to all of these apps. Kind of cool, David, because I think this is the protocol sync thesis in action. Coinbase is recognizing, hey, we don't have to build all of the apps. We don't even have to have maybe the most liquid trading markets in the world. We could just provide an interface to Uniswap and charge a fee on top of that. This to me is the future of banks. Now we'll have to see how they enact this. I do think it's going to be good for DeFi protocols overall. Not everybody's ready to hold their own private keys. They need some handholding, at least at first, to get into this space. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, they really advertise the crypto app store, which gives me flashbacks to 2017 and 2018, where people were like, oh yeah, we used to have apps in the traditional app stores, Google, iOS. Now we have these D apps. And so we're going to fundraise $100 million to build the D app store, not realizing that D apps don't actually exist as something that you can download. Like imagine going to your phone and downloading Uniswap. That's like a nonsensical thing to do. But that was like the vision back in 2017. But now this can make a little bit more sense now. I think if people are people are looking for familiarity when they come into crypto. They are straight up looking for like the DeFi tab in their Coinbase wallet, or like where's all the DeFi things? And so maybe it's actually a really power play to put all of DeFi into one single UI and really make that available as a consumer in the ways that they are used to when it comes to the App Store. So they can literally tap on Uniswap and then they open up Uniswap.
I was never a fan of the 2017 like dApp thing, like we're creating an app store, and like that was just such a, because it was very unfocused. But I am a fan of this because I think money apps are the thing That is the thing that we are producing in crypto. It's a better banking system, a better financial system for the world. And so this seems much more focused. Remember the dApps of yesteryear where it could be anything. Mm-hmm. Like it could be like a decentralized social media thing, or it could be like all of these weird things that no one was actually using. But like, hey, if I can get 4% on my my USDC on my stablecoin by using an app through Coinbase, I don't have to figure out DeFi, then cool, you know, sign me up. So Dave, let's talk about this. Kane's glorious return. So Kane, of the Synthetics product, he co-founded that. He has now returned to save the project. What's going on here? What, I didn't know Synthetics needed saving. Was it in trouble?
Yeah, so Kane likes to joke how he had taken a step back from the benevolent dictator to kind of just the guy that writes blogs over at Synthetics. Because like, to some degree, like he is the Vitalik of Ethereum for Synthetics. He is the Satoshi for Bitcoin for Synthetics. And if we like decentralized apps, we want our applications to have leaders. But there's a friction there because, you know, to some degree, leaders are leaders for a reason. And it sounds like after Kane stepped away, there was a bit of an unfilled power vacuum that never really got filled by the DAO. And so it sounds like Kane's coming back in to really just kind of be that guide that Synthetics needs. DAOing is hard. And so maybe we do still need to, you know, come to terms with the fact that while DAOs are cool, they do need like maybe some one single person kind of calling the shots until these things really grow out and mature.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to oscillate back and forth between that and the DAO structure where you like you decentralize and then you maybe do it too much and you need to like, you know, recentralize or create some more structure and then maybe do that too much and you kind of ebb and flow until you get the exact combination. Maybe that's how this is working. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's the next ebb and flow of Synthetics though. David, let's talk NFT stuff, man. We got to start here. Axie Infinity, which is a gaming platform, is absolutely booming. And I was amazed when I saw this. So this is William Pister, who writes the Bankless Metaversal newsletter. He just put this post out today. Look at this, dude. Last 30 days,
wow!
Axie Infinity has provided $11 million to its players.
Wow.
You know, that means you're playing Axie and you're making money while you're playing video games. My God, that was my dream as a 12-year-old boy growing up. Like, man, it's here. I can literally like...
There's a generation too late, games. Ryan.
Right, I know, man. Why? Like, I can play video games for a living and not just stream it like, you know, the Twitch streamers these days, but like the items I'm mining and the skills I have in this game, I can actually... These are real items with real world power. It's like, man, it's all my childhood fantasies are like happening now, David.
Dude,
I was a kid again.
Imagine if Diablo, if you could have made money from Diablo 2. Like, imagine how much money like a bail run would have gotten you.
Oh my God, imagine how addicted I would be though.
Yeah, right. Like, yeah, maybe Bankless wouldn't have been existed. You'd still be playing. it's crazy that Axie Infinity is making a substantial amount of more money, at least in the last 30 days. 30 days, not a short amount of time, than MakerDAO. Axie Infinity pulled in $11 million in revenue versus MakerDAO's $8.4 million. I'm not sure if that $11 million revenue for Axie Infinity goes to like the Axie team or if that's more like going to the players who are playing. I think it's going to the players, right?
You earn these things called like love potions and there's a market for love potions and then you can sell the love potions that you're earning on like Uniswap for money. So this is like, again, the intersection of like gaming, NFTs and DeFi all mashed together.
Totally. And this is actually not the first time that we've seen the story of people generating more income than their minimum wage in their home country. We saw this with Gaza Chain. There was a story of some Brazilian player who was making like 2 to 3 times the minimum wage just playing Gaza Chain and collecting scarce assets. I think this is the signs of things to come.
Yeah, look at this. Axie Infinity. This is Linda talking about Axie Infinity players in the Philippines earning living wage through this. Really cool how global this is as well. All right, David, on the NFT subject, Twitter is dropping its own NFTs on Rarible. That seems like a big deal. What's going on?
Yeah, Jack Dorsey is on one side of things telling us that Lightning Network is coming to Twitter, yet Twitter seems to be coming to Rarible to issue NFTs first. That's an interesting little juxtaposition right there. I don't know why these NFTs are valuable. I don't really think
seem like they're testing.
They're just tests. It seems like, yeah, this feeds up like a test, sandbox. Right? Like these aren't historical Twitter moments. It's not like Jack's tweet where he actually did sell that. These are kind of just random little Twitter creative drawings. So it's kind of the fact that the verified Twitter account is selling these things. That's really the big thing. It's not necessarily NFTs themselves.
Back to your comment about Dorsey, though, somebody asked him, or somebody said this, I've talked shit about Jack being a maxi in the past, a Bitcoin maxi, that is. But ever since following somebody, he's looking into it more. Only a matter of time before he buys into ETH. Mm-hmm. Jack Dorsey buying ETH. And then Jack Dorsey comes in this thread he was tagged on and says, no, mm-hmm. no, he is not buying ETH. And I love this follow-up. I think yep. this is the follow-up. Chainlink God says, how'd you pay the gas fees to mint these NFTs then, Jack? Somebody's buying ETH.
Either it's Jack or Twitter itself.
Is this cognitive dissonance? Like, why does why?
Just capitulate, Jack. It's okay.
Just come on, Bankless. Let's have a talk about it.
We'll be really nice.
There can be more than one coin. Yeah. There can be more than one store value. Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple more things going on in NFT world. The first is Tim Berners-Lee has sold an NFT. This guy was one of the main people behind the internet that we know and love today. He sold some original code in NFT form for $5.4 million. This is another piece of crypto culture, internet culture getting preserved and valued as an NFT. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, I really think this is one of the core legitimate purposes behind NFTs, not people just like spinning up some 3D animations and graphics and selling that. That's cool too. But NFTs are art, and art is partly historical. And if you want to own a piece of history, that's kind of the role that art serves. And if you want to own a piece of internet history, that's product market fit for NFTs. And so this going for $5.4 million, that's actually kind of where I see NFTs kind of like planting a flag and saying, this is what we are for. There's many other things. There was an NFT mania that happened, but the high priced one of ones of deep internet culture that happened before NFTs were even a thing, I think that kind of phenomenon is here to stay. So congratulations for Tim Berners-Lee, created something open source for free and then got $5.4 million like 30 years later.
Do we know who bought it? Did PleaserDAO get it? Or
PleaserDAO did not buy it. I think they voted against buying it.
Oh, interesting. Well, you know what? It's unknown super buyer. Cool. Every time this happens, though, David, it makes CNN, you mm-hmm. know? Like, and that in itself is cool. That's a great thing for crypto. All right, let's talk
CNN
about more things.
CNN issued some NFTs last week, not apparently.
What?
Fun fact. Yeah, we don't have to go into it because they were a bunch of BS, but they're also in the NFT game.
All right, can't not be in the NFT game, I guess. Even if you're Jay-Z, this is crazy, dude. This is DeFi Dad tweet. Never thought I'd see Jay-Z with a CryptoPunk in his profile. So Jay-Z bought a CryptoPunk and turned his profile into a punk? Is that right?
We don't know the first part, but we don't know if he actually bought the CryptoPunk. But yes, his avatar is a CryptoPunk. It would be weird. It would be a transgression if you didn't own the CryptoPunk that is your Twitter avatar. Yeah.
That's a hot CryptoPunk too. Simple
features. Looks like Jay-Z. You know, black eye, funny hair, gold necklace. Like, looks like Jay-Z. That's the right CryptoPunk for him.
So we don't know if Jay-Z bought that or like somebody on his team bought that, but somebody knows what they're doing with respect mm-hmm. to like NFT culture and crypto culture right. to do that. And
good branding.
I guess was that because he's minting an mm-hmm. NFT? Mm-hmm. So he minted this NFT, and maybe we could talk about it, but he also looks like has HOV.ETH
Hove, yeah.
as mm-hmm. an ENS address, HOV.ETH. He's got 99 problems, but minting ain't one. I love that, man. What's going on here?
Yeah, so he minted an NFT contract, and if you are paying attention to the ceremonious event of minting a token, people like to put in ASIC art into their token contract just because it's free space. Why not? And so they put in this big ASIC art Jay-Z into the token contract that they minted for whatever this NFT that Jay-Z is issuing. I don't think that Jay-Z is knowledgeable about CryptoPunks or ASIC art in token minting contracts himself. I think that he hired a very well-informed just like assistant or somebody to help guide or advisor, and that advisor is doing a great job. So Jay-Z, nice pick on your advisor, bro.
It looks like somebody from the Ethereum community got him Hove.eth too, which is mm-hmm. really cool. All right, so this is the actual auction. So he's releasing this NFT on Sotheby's. Mm-hmm. So again, mainstream, like artist, rapper, cultural figure meets mainstream art distributor meets crypto NFTs, another pretty big event. I don't know, man. It doesn't seem like NFTs are dead to me. It seems like stuff is still happening.
No, I think NFTs are just becoming more precise. That's what's going on. Is a lot. The sheer number of NFTs being issued is definitely going down, but like the NFTs quality that are left increasing. Behind are going up in value. Right.
Mm-hmm. Prestige value. Yeah, that's super cool. Rumor is Katy Perry NFT next.
Katy Perry NFT.
All the artists getting this. Yeah. All right, it's crazy. California girls, here we go. Bitcoin stuff. Bitcoin miner migration, man, that's been a big story. So like
story.
What's happening, bottom line, is all the Bitcoin miners are leaving China right now due to oppressive China state regulation, essentially. As they're doing that, hash rate going down, 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 down. Of course, this adjusts algorithmically every couple of weeks or so. But
well, the hash rate does not. The Bitcoin or the difficulty adjustment adjusts to accommodate changes in hash rate.
Right. So what's happening here? Are we just seeing the results of the migration going on in hash rate and difficulty adjustment?
People turning off their ASIC units to put them in boxes and ship them elsewhere. Anywhere else. I think there's a lot of, that's a really important thing to find out. Each different farm.
Texas?
Yeah. People are really optimistic that it's coming to America. People and Bitcoiners are really trying to stamp their feet saying like, hey, like America is the right place to set up your Bitcoin shop. It's good for just the PR of Bitcoin if more hash rate is onshore in America where Bitcoin is largely going to become regulated. So favorable regulations if hash rate moves onshore, people like that. But also the other conversation is that China's really dirty energy, lots of coal. And so moving anywhere else out of China is positive towards like the whole green energy narrative that Bitcoin desperately needs.
David, I'm going to skip ahead this one, but this is Bitcoin mining firm TerraWolf orders new machines. So $100 million in Bitcoin ASICs, it seems like they just ordered. I don't know if this is exclusively... Yeah, it seems like it's exclusively Bitcoin ASICs. What is going on here? So companies are still investing quite heavily in Bitcoin ASICs, $100 million here. How does this link to the Bitcoin miner migration story? And what do you think the lens on this is?
Yeah, and this actually isn't the only story of its kind this week. There's actually been a number of stories going around about just mining firms just allocating, like raising a bunch of money to purchase new ASICs. This is something that as a Bitcoin miner, you have to do. You have to always be cycling through ASICs. But like this very high, this is the highest number that I saw, 100 million going to purchase ASICs. What the strategy for Bitcoin mining, and this is just true for Bitcoin mining across the board, is that you buy like $100 million worth of Bitcoin ASICs, and then you are going to mine Bitcoin at a discount for the next like 3 to 5 years. So that $100 million of ASICs turns into somewhere between $200 to $500 million worth of Bitcoin over the next 3 to 5 years. You get
it's fixed costs that you have to amortize, right?
Exactly. The point that I would like to make is that this $100 million going to purchase ASICs, all of that $100 million and all of those ASICs are going to be deprecated probably by the end of 5 years. And 5 years is already kind of long. Like it's 3 years.
By deprecated, you mean you can no longer mine using them.
They no longer profitably mine.
They're dead, obsolete.
And then they can't, like, that's the other problem with ASICs is they can't be repurposed. And so like to some degree, like that's nice for security as in like there's nothing else for ASICs for the SHA-256 mining algorithm computers to do other than mine Bitcoin. And so when you purchase an ASIC, the only thing it can do is mine Bitcoin. As soon as it's dead, like you can't repurpose it. You can't plug it into a different system. There's only Bitcoin. And so 3 to 5 years, there's $100 million of ASIC waste that happens because these things are just literally trash. And to me, this is why people say that proof of work is just proof of stake with extra steps. If you are purchasing $100 million worth of ASICs, you are locked into mining Bitcoin. That's the only thing you can do with your $100 million investment. You are locked into these ASICs. You are locked into the value of Bitcoin and the value of the Bitcoin blockchain and the value of BTC. And then you get discounted Bitcoins over time for the next 3 to 5 years. But it's not even efficient proof of stake because you have to keep on spending capital to buy more ASICs and the ASICs keep on getting burnt and wasted. And so like this is just, I wanted to bring this up just because this is good anecdotes and good lessons for why proof of stake is what it is. It's the same, there's the same similar properties to proof of work. Just, it's just cuts to the chase, which is that proof of work is just proof of stake with extra steps involved and a lot of waste.
Stake is just tokenized ASICs. We've said that before. I think it's true here. Two other points I want to make on that, David, is one, we don't often talk, we talk about the energy consumption of Bitcoin mining, but we don't talk about the hardware energy consumption of Bitcoin mining. All of those machines need to be thrown away. And there's a whole trash energy times. ESG debate here that they're totally trash after a few years. But I will say on the flip side, Bitcoiners will say, that's actually an advantage, David, because what it does is it recycles Bitcoin. Some of the capital, right? So like it distributes capital in a way, like they'll say that staking ASICs, if you want to call them that, that the tokens behind, right? they don't deprecate. They never inflate. So that establishes a ruling oligarchy plutocracy in the network that Bitcoin doesn't have. I think we've had Justin Drake on that to kind of debate that. And what's interesting about that debate is like the actual amount of Bitcoin that gets distributed at this point in time from that is like super small, like relatively small compared to the cost of the system to do that distribution. And then the other thing is, I guess, like who's it getting distributed to, right? It's definitely not getting distributed to the mom and pops because they can't afford $100 million to run ASICs in a data center. No one's mining out of their homes. So there is a counterpoint that Bitcoiners would say about this, about it being a good thing. I don't know.
I have my counterpoints to those counterpoints. I don't know if we want to keep on going.
Lay them on me real quick.
Okay. So the whole proof of stake, rich get richer thing is like, it's good that ASICs deprecate because then if you are a mining operation, you keep on having to expend capital to keep up. Interesting take. That doesn't mean that like proof of stake is the complete opposite where like the rich only get richer. If you are staking and you are a $100 million fund or you're an individual with just like 3 Ether, you are receiving the same rate of return. Yeah. Same rate of return. And so
no economies of scale.
The stakers are getting richer as a proportion of the overall ETH supply versus non-stakers. But if you want to participate in consensus, the whole reason why proof of stake is so cool is I can do it for my laptop, I can do it for my home, and I have the access to the same rate of return as a gargantuan hedge fund. And so to some degree, like it's not a distribution problem if everyone can access this stake, right? If everyone can access the upside. And that's a really important point to drive home. The other thing that Bitcoiners often talk about is how Bitcoin is going to be green because it's going to incentivize energy production, and Bitcoiners and Bitcoin mining operations are actually going to be the source of energy because they are going to be paired with an energy generation facility, and Bitcoin miners are actually going to get their energy for free. This is a theory as to the future of Bitcoin miners. This is articulated by Bitcoiners. The problem with that is that once Bitcoin miners get their energy for free, then it's the same critique that they were just critiquing proof of stake about, where the rich get richer because these miners have zero capital cost because they're getting free energy. And so there's friction, there's tension between these two narratives articulated by Bitcoiners that you can only pick one.
All right. Interesting, right? There's definitely both sides to this argument. It's interesting to see that play out. But wow, a lot of money on Bitcoin mining still happening. While we're on Bitcoin, David, let's talk about Cathie Wood's ARK Invest. They are planning to create a Bitcoin ETF called ARKB. Now, whether they'll be successful, who knows? No one's been successful previously, but this is really interesting. They had been buying Grayscale in bulk, and they're still doing that. They're buying both Grayscale GBTC and the ETH-E version of Grayscale. This is kind of a departure to kind of cut out the Grayscale middleman and apply for an ETF directly. Whether they'll be successful or not, who knows? Only the SEC knows. Only Gary Gensler and crew are in control of that. But it is an interesting move at any rate, and definitely shows bullishness on Bitcoin and crypto writ large.
The pile of proposed Bitcoin ETFs just continues to grow. I really feel sorry for the SEC because they are really...
Do you? It's easy, man. It's in a hard... I have a way out for the SEC. Just approve them.
All of them? And then if you don't approve all of them, how do you select which ones to not approve?
Not credibly neutral.
Right. Yeah. It's not a credibly neutral choice. And they've really backed themselves into a corner on this one. But, Cathie Wood, love what you're doing. I really hope that you get your Bitcoin ETF.
And I hope you come on Bankless.
Yep, TBD. That one too.
Announcement coming soon, hopefully. All right, let's talk about this. Conclude Bitcoin news. Adults in El Salvador are getting $30 in Bitcoin as El Salvador is unveiling details to make crypto a legal tender. We talked about this a couple of episodes ago. It's big news, right? Making legal tender, making Bitcoin legal tender in El Salvador is big. There's always this question of, okay, how are the people going to benefit from this? Mm-hmm. This is kind of cool, David.
Right.
Looks like the El Salvadorian government is going to give individual citizens up to $30 in order to promote adoption. And they have to buy that Bitcoin from somewhere. Right. Mm-hmm. They can't just mint it. They can't produce it. This is not a fiat currency, right? They have to buy it in order to get it or mine it. Maybe some volcano mining. I don't know. But it's kind of a cool story. And I think it's great for the Bitcoin community and great for Bitcoin adoption.
And if you are an El Salvadorian citizen and you are skeptical about El Salvador's usage of Bitcoin, perhaps this
free
move,
money helps.
Free money helps. That's literally the purpose of airdrops, right? And also, if you want to generate a Bitcoin native economy inside of El Salvador, you need Bitcoin to be in the hands of people. Like, imagine if you're just like, if your family in El Salvador is talking to this other family in El Salvador and they're like, oh, Bitcoin is legal tender now. Do you guys have any? No, we don't have any Bitcoin. Oh, well, now you do. Now you, everyone just got $30 in Bitcoin. So now you can actually start that in that Bitcoin native economy inside of El Salvador. I think this is a really good move that really indicates that the president of El Salvador, Nayib, his heart's in the right place. His heart and mind's in the right place. So good move. Good move.
I saw Nayib shaking hands or standing next to Peter McCormick, a podcaster. Mm-hmm. It's what a crazy world we live in, David. Mm-hmm. Like a media podcaster shaking hands with the president of the sovereign nation to talk about Bitcoin. Kind of wild stuff. Anyway, we'll be following that as it progresses in the future. Let's talk about Binance and UK regulation. This is our regulatory section. The UK is cracking down on Binance, ordering the exchange to cease operations in the UK. I'm not sure how much they're able to actually restrict Binance's operation, but it seems like they're trying to. Any takes here?
Yeah, the longer that Binance continues to exist, the more and more it's going to just come under the purview of nation states. It's a meat space company under that's operating under meat space laws. The meat space is going to come after Binance at some point in time, and it's going to have to bend the knee to nation states. That is my take.
Yep, I think it's happy to bend the knee too. All right, let's talk about the Fed now. So this is a vice chair of the Federal Reserve Board, Randy Quarles, and he authored a paper called Parachute Pants, an article that is, and Central Bank Money, which basically he argues the TLDR is our existing banking system is fine. Our payment system works well. It's getting even better all of the time. And we don't really need a CDBC stablecoin at all or a CDBC strategy to compete with China. He said this, and then he also said, which I find very interesting, but yes, we should be saying yes to stablecoins, to private stablecoins. So his take is no CBDC. We don't need to create a centralized China-style CBDC, but yes, stablecoins are fine, like private stablecoins acting as sort of a proxy CBDC, that's okay. So it just shows, David, that there continues to be some division, I think, within the US government and the Fed on what its strategy is. Unlike China, which seems like, no, we're full steam ahead. We're doing the CBDC thing. We're going to digitize everything. The Fed is kind of waffling on, should we do one or should we not? We're not really sure. And it keeps going back and forth, it seems like.
Yeah, on the last weekly roll-up with Anthony Cezano, we had a topic about how the Fed is continuing to research and look into central bank digital currencies. I'm like, oh, great, more research, more talk. This is interesting that a Fed vice chair is saying, hey, let's let the private market produce the products. I'm aligned with this, actually. That makes more sense to me. I mean, do fix your banking system is not what you said it was, if that was the actual quote. Like, let's be real here. And also, stablecoins are the solution to that. But I also agree with you. We do not need a central bank digital currency for the US dollar.
All right, let's talk crypto banks really quick. So FTX, which is a crypto exchange, crypto bank, as we call them, has just recruited Tom Brady and Giselle, Tom Brady's wife, to be the spokesperson for FTX. I don't know, I've given them some equity, some investing as well, some money in exchange for this. Really interesting how crypto banks are starting to saturate into mainstream. Both we talked about this from a regulatory perspective, but now like mainstream influencers, not on the DeFi bandwagon, but like on the crypto bank bandwagon. I don't love this. I don't hate this. What's your take?
Yeah, my question is, do you think Sam Bankman-Fried is really all that much of a sports fan?
Oh my God. No,
I don't think he is. I don't think he is.
The answer to that question is no. Right. But is he a savvy business person?
Yes.
Is he a new level banker
right.
using all the tools at his disposal to make more money and make FTX bigger. Yes.
Yes, that's exactly what's going on.
Okay. Well, I don't know how this ends. I guess it's okay for crypto. I don't know long-term if it's good for decentralization. I feel like there's some final bosses out there, but there is a mini boss where DeFi might have to fight the crypto banks at some point in time.
Right.
I've always thought that.
Right.
We'll see how it goes. I like FTX. SBF has me blocked on Twitter, but if I could tweet at you, I'd be like, hey, come on Bankless. Let's talk about what your plans are.
Yeah, right.
Let's talk about it. All right, let's do some drive-bys, David.
Well,
ICP. It's not Insane Clown Posse. What is ICP? What are they doing?
ICP is the Short Internet story. Computer. Is that what that means? I think that's what that means. It's the token for Definity, and Definity has been largely critiqued by its large, high production launch and high media, just overall, just like a ton of marketing, ton of PR, ton of production.
Taken forever, too.
Taken forever to get their product out the door. People who pay attention to Definity say that their code is really interesting, but I think that they have just taken all of the opportunity that they could have had to be a legitimate product, and they crumpled it up in a piece of paper and they threw it in the trash because the team dumped so much of the tokens into the free market that it just tanked the price. And so the Definity team walked away with, I think, something like, can you go back to the first screenshot, Ryan? Something with 300, they dumped 20 million ICP tokens, Definity tokens, at the average price of $300, walked away with $6 billion in the first 2 weeks of trading. So they said, hey, all you people that are bullish Definity, that's great. We're going to dump on you. And there's no faster way to just ruin your legitimacy as a project than to dump on the people that are willing to buy into your project on day one. Like, big mistake. Big mistake.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Well, how do I say it's a mistake? They made $6 billion, but also you ruined your legitimacy.
Yeah, it depends what their intent was. And legitimacy, I think, as a currency, as a money
It's gone.
Yeah, that definitely feels gone, or at least it would take a lot for that to come back. Let's talk about Visa. Visa makes 5 strategic crypto hires and placements. Dude, Visa is doubling down in crypto. We're going to have the guy behind this, Q Sheffield, on Bankless to talk about what Visa is doing, hopefully at some point in the future. They just have to get that cleared by legal. But I want to hear what Visa is doing, man, because it seems like they've got a crypto strategy and they're gearing up. David, this last thing, USDC stablecoin is now expanding to multiple blockchains, could soon be on 10 networks. So this is not just Ethereum, but it's Tron. It's, I don't know, wherever else can support
L2s?
Crypto. L2s, I'm sure. Cool. Solana, I'm sure. Any thoughts on this expansion? It's just inevitable.
Nope. The US dollar owes no allegiance to any blockchain, but I expect the majority of the USDC to stay on Ethereum.
All right, guys, we are going to be back with some hot takes, but before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Bankless is proud to be supported by Uniswap. Uniswap is a new paradigm in asset exchange infrastructure. Instead of a cumbersome order book system where trades are matched with other humans, Uniswap is an autonomous piece of software on Ethereum, which is what Ryan and I call a money robot. No human counterparties or centralized intermediaries, just autonomous code on Ethereum. Input the token you want to sell and receive the token you want to buy. Something brand new in the Uniswap ecosystem is the Uniswap Grants program is now accepting applications for grants. We have been saying this for a while and we'll say it again. DAOs have money and they are in need of labor. If you think that you have something to contribute to the Uniswap DAO, apply for a grant to Uniswap. Just look at the size of the Uniswap treasury. It's almost $3 billion. This mountain of capital is looking for labor. Do you have something of value to contribute to the Uniswap DAO? No matter how big or small your idea is, you can apply for a uni grant at unigrants.org and help steer Uniswap in the direction that you think it should go. That's exactly what we did to get Uniswap to be a sponsor for Bankless, and you can do the same for your project. Thank you, Uniswap, for sponsoring Bankless. Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got into crypto in 2017, and it's been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and in over 50 countries worldwide. And on Gemini, there are markets for over 30 various different crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens. And it's one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Gemini just launched their Earn program, where you can earn up to 7.4% interest on 26 various crypto assets. If you're tired of paying fees in DeFi, or you don't want to worry about DeFi exploits, but you still want to earn interest on your crypto assets, Gemini Earn is the product for you. Another product I'm stoked to get my hands on is the Gemini Crypto Back Credit Card, which gives you 3% cash back on all of your purchases, but paid to you in your preferred crypto asset. When I get my Gemini credit card, I'm going to make sure that I get my cash back in ETH. So whenever I buy something, I get a little bit of ETH bonus back to me at the same time. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 Bitcoin bonus. Check them out at gemini.com/gobankless.
All right, guys, we are back with the takes of the week. Then we're going to get to memes, so stick with us. The first is from Gajesh, I think. Gajesh.eth.com in the 90s, .eth in the 20s, the 2020s, that is kind of a cool take. This is like the new internet. That's what this is saying, .com to .eth. Any thoughts here?
Yeah, to some degree, I'm also not paying attention to this, but the world of like .eth addresses, like, you know, I got DavidHoffman.eth, you got RSA.eth, like, there's a world of speculation to be had in there, and I don't know why that's not a bigger world. Like, you gotta claim the ENSTO names if you think that this is true.
I'd pay a few $100 for DavidHoffman.eth, like, even now.
Dude, I offered the guy that owned David.eth 5 ETH for David.eth, but the lowest bid was 13 ETH, and I was like, oh no, I like ETH too much.
Ooh, like too much. That's a lot. You know, funny story, we can't get bankless.eth either. Somebody's got that. Actually, no, we did get bankless.eth.
Yeah, we have it. We do have it. You bought it.
Sorry.
You bought it. I was about to say, you told me you got it.
Yeah, no, we spent, $3,000 on that.
Yeah, we spent some money to claim that. That was a good move.
Sorry, I was thinking of bankless.dao.eth that we can't do.
Someone's squatting on
that one. Oh my God, I don't even know the ENS names we own. We have bankless.eth, guys. Never fear. You know what? Jagesh is also, he's like a 13-year-old kid. Do you know this, David? So he listened to Bankless. He's DM'd me before. He's a blockchain developer. He's a kid. He's got almost 20,000 followers.
And the meme for his header, like, this guy is deep in crypto culture.
The Godfather?
Yeah.
I wonder.
He's with it, man.
Yeah. How many people do you think like listen to the show who are like 18 or like under 18?
I don't know. Maybe the Instadap brothers who made Instadap, they were both under 18 when they started working on Instadap. I think the youngest one was like 15 when he started working on Instadap, and then they raised a couple million dollars a few years later before one of them hit 18. It was crazy.
This is awesome, man. This is millennials handing the torch over to Zoomers. Mm-hmm. Like, we kind of started this thing, but like, you guys are going to take it to the finish line. Yep. So it's awesome to see. All right, let's do this take. So this is, I think it starts with Gutenberg. Yeah. Why don't you read this out, David?
Yeah, this is a tweet from Greg Eisenberg. He says, the Gutenberg launched the printing press when 96% of the people in Europe were illiterate. That's how it feels to be building in Web3/crypto today. It's just early. There's an interesting, like, you know, thought experiment to be had where, like, imagine you're inventing the Gutenberg machine and some investor comes up to you and goes, why would you invent the printing press when only 4% of the population can read? Like, that doesn't make any sense. No one's going to want your product.
Bad UX.
Turns out it was a printing press that taught people to read and then became the most influential piece of technology of like the next 500 years. So Anthony Cesano quote retweets this tweet and says, this tweet has been messing with my head since I saw it yesterday. And then friend of the pod, Josh Rosenthal, the guy behind the Crypto Renaissance podcast, goes, Sazzle is in the know. It's a great point and even more spot on than the original poster of this tweet. Josh says, permissionless communication drove the Renaissance combined with ledger-based fintech in the 1400s, unraveling hierarchies and empowering communities. Links to a YouTube video. I'm pretty sure that's our podcast. And that's why that podcast was so good. And if you haven't listened to the Crypto Renaissance podcast, you got to go listen to it.
Links to a specific part in this podcast. That's great, dude. I love this tweak. I think it is spot on how many people are learning finance through crypto today.
Right. Me.
This is how I'm learning finance. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about this Coinbase. This is Brian Armstrong again. He says, we plan to list every crypto asset where legally viable. This is a departure, I think, but I'm glad they are at least broadcasting this because there was a time and place where Coinbase was seen as sort of a gatekeeper for retail.
Right.
Like they would help you avoid bad investments, like terrible assets. And I think now they're saying like, we're making no statement as to whether these assets are good buys or bad buys or complete scams or not scams.
Right.
If it's legally viable, we're just going to list it.
Right.
It does feel like that is the lowest common denominator for exchanges. Like if Binance is listing it, how can Coinbase not listing it?
Right.
So I understand this approach. And like I guess I appreciate the clarity there. It's like just because it's on Coinbase doesn't mean you should buy it, guys.
Totally. They used to have the Coinbase like asset framework to really gauge the quality of an asset, and they would score on different like different scores. And that was kind of like a cover your own ass strategy that they were doing. And I think actually that might have backfired, because if you start talking about the different natures of the different properties of the asset, is it centralized, who owns the supply, blah, blah, blah. Well, then you actually start to get into a realm that you maybe didn't want to get into the first place, which is delving too deep as to the nature of the assets. And so instead of having that like five part like point level system that there was the original framework, they are just doing a binary one or zero. Like, is it legally viable?
Is it legal?
Or is it not? Right. And to some degree that like, you know, removes responsibility for even commenting on the quality of the token. So as a profit maximalist and a business maximalist perspective, it makes sense.
You know, it's kind of fun is Uniswap doesn't even check for that. It's even more credibly neutral. It doesn't even rely on the legal system.
Right.
Is it an ERC-20 asset?
Right.
Or not.
Uh-huh.
That's the only level of gatekeeping or permission you need for Uniswap, which is a beautiful thing. All right. Let's look at this Vitalik quote, David. This was really cool. And it's a Vitalik quote from a long time ago, actually. But it's held up like a lot of things Vitalik has talked about or done over the years. Whereas most technologies, Vitalik says, tend to automate workers on the periphery doing menial tasks, what blockchains do is automate away the center. So instead of putting the taxi driver out of a job, blockchain puts Uber out of a job and lets the taxi driver work with the customer directly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a super powerful quote, because what he's talking about is like a new architecture for the economy. We just had this conversation with some folks about the creator economy, our panel that we just had yesterday, David. And we talked about this being a more friendly era and economy for individual creators. And I think that's what Vitalik is talking about, that blockchain is actually creating a mechanism for creators to interact directly with the market without having to go through a big Web 2.0 middleman or an Uber, for instance. That is kind of the end state goal of this, and super cool if we can make that happen.
Yeah, this reminds me of another Vitalik quote where he says, like, the cool thing about Ethereum is it doesn't put the taxi cab driver out of a job. It puts the CEO of Uber out of a job, or it puts the middle management or the bureaucracy out of a job. And, you know, bureaucracy, by almost definition, doesn't add value. It's just an efficiency.
Right.
And it's just like, it's not the value creators. The value creators are the Uber drivers or the content producers or whatever. And this is actually the original version of DAOs. DAOs these days are really kind of just nicknames for digital organizations where people just exist in a Discord and have a plan and a goal. The original vision of DAOs was code at the center and humans at the periphery, where Uber drivers would come interact with like the Uber app, the Uber DAO, the Uber D app, and the Uber D app would autonomously ascribe them like tasks, and then the Uber humans would do the tasks, and then the Uber DAO would, you know, award money to them. Code at the center, humans at the periphery. That was the OG version of DAOs, and that's still yet being built out. Like stuff like Airbnb and Uber and the sharing economy stuff, really hard to do, but that's the vision that Vitalik is articulating here. And I still think that's the vision for Ethereum. It's just like probably the hardest thing to tackle.
And our friend Jesse Walden would say this is the ownership economy. So it's not just the Uber driver earning money. The Uber driver is actually earning ownership, which
earning
means
equity in the platform,
in the network. And so upside, which is super cool, and a way to flip capital markets on its head. Let's talk about this. So Koopa Troopa, another participant in the DAO panel that we just had. So guys, check that out if you haven't yet. I think that's on YouTube right now. We're probably putting it in the podcast too.
Oh, it's already out on the podcast.
It's out on the podcast. Wrote a great piece on the DAO landscape, David. What are some of the highlights from this article for you?
Yeah, Cooper is a great writer, and he's just paying attention to DAOs at large. And so if you are, we keep on talking about DAOs on Bankless, and if you're trying to get up to speed with DAOs, definitely check out this article from Cooper. He both like just talks about the current state of specific DAOs as well as more high level, broad just ideas or thoughts about how DAOs are organized, and some good mental models and graphics to go along with it.
All right, David, it's that time of the week. What are you excited about, David Hoffman?
I got an article coming out on the Bankless newsletter next week, and it's been a while since I've written, to this level of effort. Some of my most recent articles, I've kind of just written it and sended it out, but this one I've really been taking my time, really going back and editing. It's all about the March of DeFi capital efficiency in the lens of Ether, the asset, right? So DeFi is always in a competition to become more and more and more capitally efficient. Every new successful DeFi protocol is successful because it's a more capitally efficient version of any predecessor. Uniswap V2 is a improvement on the capital efficiency of V1. Uniswap V3 is a capital efficient improvement on V2. Balancer V2 is a capitally efficient improvement upon Balancer. It's all about capital efficiency. Layer on capital efficiency to how ETH is the native asset of Ethereum and receives all of these capitally efficient tailwinds. And that's completely aside from Ether as ultrasound money. Ether is ultrasound money specifically at the protocol level. Ultrasound comes from the Ethereum protocol. DeFi is doing something completely differently, which is also putting tailwinds behind Ether, the asset, which is allowing Ether to become the most capitally efficient asset of all time. That's what I've been writing about. Still in the editing process, really trying to make this as punchy as possible. But I think this article is going to be a good one. And that's what I'm excited about.
This is new for you. You seem oddly bullish ETH, which I've never heard from you before, David.
I've come around to Ether lately.
It sounds like an article from like 2019 or 2020, mm-hmm. when like you were writing these big thought pieces, mm-hmm. on how DeFi protocols were going to kind of consume and eat up Ether as an asset. So, mm-hmm. man, I'm super excited to read that.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, it's always been the game for DeFi applications has always been to gobble up Ether, right? And the competition for DeFi apps to become more capitally efficient is just incentives, better and better incentives for people to deposit their Ether into these DeFi apps. DeFi apps want your Ether. They're trying to eat it, and so they're trying to convince you to put it in there, and they do that by making a better product. It's crazy
competition.
Competition.
They're competing for your ETH.
Yes. We always say competition is good for the consumer. In DeFi, competition is good for Ether.
Absolutely.
Ryan, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about DAOs, man. I'm feeling that DAO energy. Did a conference about DAOs. I need to get it caught up with. We had a creator economy panel on DAOs. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing what's happening in the Bankless DAO.
We had hours of DAO content on Bankless yesterday,
by the
way.
Oh my God, so much content. And I'm listened to your Meet the Nation with Coordinate, which mm-hmm. was awesome. They talked about at the end about like kind of DAO theory. And I'm just appreciating this DAO energy. And it seems so simple, right? What are DAOs? They're programmable LLCs. But this is so fundamentally important, like programmable capital coordination tools. You got multi-sigs, which are like the programmable treasuries. You've got tokens, which are like programmable cap tables. You've got this all built on top of Ethereum as a programmable banking system. It's global, it's internet native, it's completely open. Koopa Troopa said this too lately, where he said basically DAOs are where NFTs were a year ago. And I feel the same way about DAOs as I felt a year ago about NFTs, which is like, I knew they were this really exciting, really awesome primitive that we're so early in using. And I know that DAOs are going to be absolutely massive. Jesse Walden said, we're going to have a DAO sometime in the next couple of decades that is bigger and more important and more complicated and interesting than social media tech, like Facebook. Mm-hmm. Wow, like bigger than the biggest companies in the world. Right. I plus one that. I agree with that. But here's the interesting part, David, is like, I know they're going to be absolutely huge as a primitive, but I'm not sure exactly how. Right. Like, I expect to be surprised, just mm-hmm. like NFTs. Last year, this time, we started doing some NFT episodes before they just blew up and became absolutely massive. And that's what's so cool about crypto is like, you know, this stuff is going to be big, but it's so emergent. You don't know when or exactly how. You just know that this is going to be massively impactful. So maybe something in gaming? I don't know. Like, which communities haven't gotten a hold of these DAO primitives and technology before? We'll have to see how it plans out.
I mean, World of Warcraft guilds feel like the original DAOs, right?
Right.
Like people coming Raids? Together from all over the internet fighting over scarce resources sounds like a DAO, right? So we've seen this energy before. I think when Koopa says DAOs are just a year behind NFTs, I think I'll add that like it really feels like DAO tooling is really the subject matter that we are currently building right now. Is DAO tooling is kind of where NFT tooling was a year ago or so. And this is why like the people at Coordinate are doing fantastic work. DAOs need tools. DAOs need help. You can't just put people in a Discord and mint a token. You need tools to help facilitate how to DAO. And so I think we are about to embark upon the golden age of DAO tooling. And once that gets finished up, and once we figure out what are the tools that DAOs really need to DAO, then the 1,000 DAOs will flourish.
Yeah, and guys, if you're listening to Bankless, you're looking for some alpha, right? I think that this is alpha. Yep. Remember when we were talking to the founders of Nifty Gateway? Mm-hmm. And they're like, we always believed NFTs would be huge,
right?
And we were saying this in 2018, we're saying it 2019, mm-hmm. we're saying it in 2020, and now suddenly early 2021, right. The whole world understands it. But like we've been building and saying this the entire time. This is what DAOs feel like to me. So if you're looking for opportunities in the space to plug in, to work for, like maybe work for a DAO, earn some income, maybe invest in some of this underlying infrastructure or some of the DAOs themselves, now is the time. You're mm-hmm. still front running that opportunity, but it's going to be big. I think it's going to blow up in a big way. So maybe some alpha there. We'll have to see.
If Jesse Walden thinks that there's going to be a DAO that becomes bigger than Facebook over the next 10 years, like if you can find that, like 9 years before, if you can find that one, if you can find it, like that's your, you can retire.
And here's the thing. Okay. So Facebook was not open mm-hmm. to investor, like to Main Street investors, wasn't open to the world. Just a small set of people who our credit investors in the US could invest in Facebook and realize those early gains. Like Facebook didn't IPO until like, I don't know, 2008, 2009, something like that. Right. With DAOs, you have immediate access to buy into a DAO and earn some equity from day one. Massive opportunity.
Yep. All right. Don't miss it.
Don't miss it. Let's drop something cool really quick, and then we'll talk meme of the week. David, what are we looking at here?
We're looking at a map of the Bankless Nation. We're actually not looking at anything. You're going to have to show it, Ryan.
Oh, sorry. Here we go. Are we looking at it now?
So this is a cool map made by a member of the Bankless DAO, Perchy. Shout out Perchy. There's a link for this in the show notes if you want to go and look at it yourself. But it's just one of those maps that has something in every single corner. But it's overall the Bankless Nation, right? We got Bankless DAO in the top left connected to Bankless LLC. I think we are a radio tower, Ryan. That's kind of cool. We got the charts for the mountain range. We have hard cap hills for Bitcoin. We got the cold storage deep in the mountain range. Got the yield farms. Got centralization harbor. There's just a bunch of cool little Easter eggs all over this map, and so it was really just creative work out of the Bankless DAO, out of Perchy, and I really enjoy just going around and seeing what's in here.
Yeah, it's really cool. Definitely, it has kind of a Lord of the Rings type feel, medieval type feel to it too. I think this the Bitcoin Citadel that looks a little familiar. Maybe Sauron's Tower. I'm not sure. Is Bitcoin the Great Eye?
We don't have to say the quiet part.
You think
out loud.
That's coincidental? Okay. Anyway, it's a super cool drawing. So make sure you check that out. All right, David, meme of the week. Explain this. What are we looking at?
This is the classic Anakin and Padme meme. And so Anakin has got laser eyes on in the first panel, and he goes, laser eyes until $100,000, 100,000 Bitcoin. And then Padme says, you're going to take them off if there's a bear market, right? And then the next panel is Anakin still with laser eyes, just now with a McDonald's cap on his head. So no. You're not taking it off, even though it's a bear market. And really, this is just a meme about conviction. It's like, I'm going to go to McDonald's and work for McDonald's before I lose my conviction in Bitcoin. So that's a pretty fun meme.
The McDonald's crypto memes just won't stop. They'll always be here with us when the bear market's on. Good stuff. All right. I think that is it, Bankless Nation. Thank you for joining us for another recap. As always, none of this was financial advice. Crypto is risky. ETH is risky. So is DeFi and Bitcoin. You could lose what you put in. But this is the frontier. We are headed west. Thanks for joining us on Bankless.